We do an interview every Friday. Today it's with the editor of the Belfast Telegraph, Mike Gilson. He was appointed to his Belfast Telegraph job in 2009. Before that, he held a series of senior newspaper posts across the water, including editor of The Scotsman. Mike, good morning to you.
Morning, Stephen.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. Good to talk to you. And there you get a sense, even that last call alone, Mike, of the special place that Northern Ireland is. What was it like for an outsider coming into this?
Yes, it certainly is. I mean, we had the Tesco issue last week, didn't we, with the Jubilee badges up in Limavady. And, yeah, it certainly is it is an interesting place. And, you know, symbols and you know, even beach towels become issues of controversy. So, you know, in some ways it's good. Those stories keep coming, don't they? But I have heard people say that we go a long way out of our way to get upset in this country. I think that's also true as well.
Was it scary coming into Northern Ireland?
Not at all. Not at all. When you survive Scotland, you can survive anything. Not at all. No, I think it's been a fantastic 3 years. I love Belfast. It's a vibrant place. There's plenty of things up for discussion. You know, opinions matter, as you know only too well here, and that's great for a journalist. So, you know, I think it's a place that's still on the up, and you know, it's been a great time.
And the Belfast Telegraph, it's a heritage brand. It's one of the most important brands in newspapers. You've got the newsletter and the Daily Mirror and the Irish News, and I hope I haven't left any of them out. But the Belfast Telegraph, very much up there, and therefore you carry the weight of responsibility to keep it up there.
Absolutely, and it's a very ferocious newspaper market here. There's no question about that. You know, perhaps much better that and much tougher than many parts of England and Scotland. So yeah,
Why is it tougher here?
I think there are that many more papers. I mean, I think the stats show it out. You know, even down to the local weeklies, which are very strong here compared to in England and Scotland, where frankly they're struggling. And I think the thirst for news and the thirst for local news and as you well know is somehow still a bit stronger here. I think there's still a lot more to play for here, obviously, you know, in terms of our future, in terms of you know, where we're going, and in terms of how we're governed. All those things are probably a little bit more you know in doubt than they are in the rest of the UK. So that makes it all a lot more interesting.
And it's such a difficult time for newspapers. How difficult is it?
Yeah, it is difficult. Obviously, we're in the perfect storm of a recession. We've got new social media and changing lifestyles coming along, and all those things, and that makes it very, very hard to sort of navigate your way through the waters. But I think at the end of it, it's about trust. It's about, as you say, keeping the brand of the Belfast Telegraph alive. It's been going for 170 odd years, and at all that time, it stood for trust. Same with your show. You know, it's about brands, isn't it? People come to them to listen because they can trust what people say, and they can trust to you know, for a proper debate. And I think as long as we keep that brand, as long as we keep true to it, you know, the future is not as grim as a lot of the as the doom-mongers would have believed.
Isn't it? I mean, are we not seeing now the beginning of the end, with all due respect, for newspapers, unless there is radical change? And I'm not questioning the journalism of the Belfast Telegraph or any other newspaper. Indeed, quite the opposite. I feel for you guys. I really, really do.
Yeah.
But you've got an era now where people want their news instantly, and once you guys print it, it's old.
I don't think it is. I mean, as many of your listeners will have been reading a very interesting series of interviews this week about your good self. And actually, what newspapers are now is they're about depth, they're about exclusive, and they're about long reads. I think what happens in life is there are a lot of corrections in society. Things go along, and we all go on to Twitter, we all go on to Facebook, and yet gradually what happens is people realize they want something a bit more, or something a bit deeper, and actually something, you know, for example, the interview's been running with you this week, been fascinating, and they've been very long. Gail's written a very long story there, and actually to sit down and read...
I couldn't get Walker out of my house. She was in my house for 10 hours. This is no, Gail Walker.
I know. She said she didn't get so much as get a glass of water, I don't think.
That's true. She got a bottle of water and a bottle and didn't get a glass.
But what I'm saying there is that actually I think, you know, you look at some of these people now in tweets, that's 140 words, and there is so much rubbish out there. If you weren't in your show, let's say the Nolan show was just pure listeners going onto the radio without you getting involved in it and navigating your way through it, what kind of show would it be? And I think it's the same thing for newspapers. I think that's why we still have a long, long way to go. radio was supposed to kill us. TV was supposed to kill us. The internet was supposed to kill us. And I think we've, you know, there are a lot of people who would have us believe that. And funny enough, Stephen, those people tend to work in social media and digital as well. But I think it's not as dark as.
So do you think you can see a day when the printed copy of a newspaper within our lifetime will be gone?
No, I don't.
People will be reading it on their iPads, on their tablets, on their phones.
Yes, I think that there's obviously that's happening. I mean, obviously we've got a hugely.
What's the growth like with your iPad business, for example, compared to the paper print?
Yeah, we have 7,000 subscriptions. Now our newspaper sells 58,000 a day. So you just get you some idea about that. You know, but that's growing, and that's a good thing, because guess what? They're paying for it, and it's the newspaper in tablet form, and I think that's part of the future. I think if you look at our 2 million unique users on our internet site, I mean, I tell you something, Stephen. A journalist at the Belfast Telegraph today reaches a wider audience than they've ever done in the history of the Belfast Telegraph. So we're as influential as we've ever been. Now, you're going to tell me the next thing is, how do we get people to pay for that? And that is the 64,000 million question, if you like.
Yeah, why aren't they paying for it?
Well, they are gradually beginning to pay for it, I think. You know, 7,000 subscriptions is a paid-for service. I think we've obviously got used to having news for free online. I think that will have to change as time goes on. And I tell you why I think it will. We pay the license fee to hear you. And I think there will be gradually a realization that if we want proper journalism that questions people and that wants, you know, the people on the Hill to be held to account, then actually you do have to fund that journalism. It doesn't come for free. Let me tell you, if we were removed from the scene tomorrow and it was left to bloggers and tweeters, it would be the blind leading the blind.
I'll ask you about The Hill in a second. Let's talk about the elephant in the room. You're on the BBC. You're talking to me. I work for the BBC. And yet the BBC is a force where people can, after they've paid their licence fee, they can avail of so much news, and that means that you've got a massive competitor. Do you think the BBC in Northern Ireland is too powerful, is too dominant, or do you think the situation is about right?
I mean, look. I think the BBC is a fantastic organisation when they do the things well. I mean, the radio shows. I think there have been times in the past where the BBC have reached out too far into things that the private sector can do. And I'm talking about magazines, and I'm talking about things like that. In terms of news, yes, of course, it's a competitor. It keeps us on our toes. Frankly, I think we do different things. I think we don't worry about. What news we get. We get plenty of exclusives in our paper that the BBC don't get. I don't have too much of a worry about that. I think if you looked at our website versus the BBC website, you know, again, we have huge amount of hits on there. If you've got a huge website across the UK, but in a local sense, the Belfast Telegraph is more than punching its weight. It is a big beast. It needs to be kept in check sometimes. There's a huge amount of resource there compared to the private sector, ourselves, the Irish News, Newsletter, UTV, those sorts of things. So, yes, in a small country, it can get overbalanced. And trust me, we'll be pointing that out.
Do you think it's about right in Northern Ireland at the moment?
The danger at the moment is it's probably a little bit overbalanced in that obviously, you know, in the private sector of news, we are struggling a little bit with the recession, and we are probably losing a bit more in terms of staff and resource than you are. And I think that's not a healthy place to be. You know, nobody wants a sort of Soviet Union-style broadcaster and nothing else. You know, plurality is absolutely what we need. And I think there obviously does need to be about debate that. But I wouldn't be a BBC basher just for the sake of it, unlike maybe some people over the water.
What's your take on the executive, that the folks on the Hill at the moment, and how accountable they want to be?
We get pelters from all sides, which I think is a great thing for the Belfast Telegraph. So I think that's a good place for us to be. I think we're running a poll next week, which shows again that people have a very, very low opinion of Stormont, incredibly low. I won't give away the detail, but it is low, as you'd probably not be surprised. But at the same time, people, I think it's that issue where we are now, that people are pleased that we are where we are, pleased that both sides are locked into something, that keeps everybody on board, and we don't have the old union power and all this unionist power and all that sort of
thing. Are we to blame for that, by the way? Are people like you and I to blame for that? And is it unfair on the politicians that they've got such a low poll rating? Are we actually reflecting how hard they really are working? Or are people like you and I constantly going for the negative headlines and hammering them too much?
Well, the First Minister would say of you and me that exactly that, wouldn't he? And, you know, but I don't really accept that. I think we have to hold a mirror up to these guys. I tell you something, in other parts of the UK and down south as well, the governments get a tougher ride than the government gets here. And I don't think that's a bad thing. Sometimes we are the official opposition because, let's be honest, apart from Jim Allister, there isn't an opposition. We're all locked into a mandatory form of government, which for the time being works, but I think...
And do you consider yourself to be part of the opposition now?
I think we have to be. We have to be a critical friend like you are, and I think, you know, we have to be pointing out when things are slow, when programmes don't come forward, when shared future policies are, you know, anemic and not good enough.
But that's not democracy, Mike, is it? Because the Belfast Telegraph is not elected. So what gives you the right to consider yourself to be, you know, a pseudo-opposition?
Well, I think, put it this way, if we didn't chime with our readers, they'd soon let us know. If that wasn't a role that they wanted us to do, then we'd soon let us know. I think, you know, we do a lot of research into our readers, as you do into your listeners. And that frustration about why things don't move forward more quickly, why there aren't sort of visions that come forward that we can all sign up to, I think is still there. And that's a role that we must and you must keep asking of our people, regardless of the pelters we get off stage, if you like. And I think, you know, official opposition might be too strong. But I tell you again, if you take away some of these things, some of this journalism, some of this paid-for journalism, whether it be licence fee or via advertising, you have a very much weakened democracy in Northern Ireland.
Give the listeners this morning and the readers of the Belfast Telegraph a sense, Mike, without betraying any confidences, of how much... how pressurised it gets behind the scenes when you're doing a critical story of any political party in Northern Ireland, a big major story. You know, do these people come on and shout and yell, or what's the pressure like, or what way does it work?
Yeah, I think they do come on and shout and yell.
At you?
Yeah, well, not necessarily. They don't always necessarily get through to the right into the inner sanctum, but I have had it in myself. But look, we're big enough and ugly enough to deal with those things, and you know, we're professional enough to know that people will spin, people will be upset, and you know, it's part and parcel. There's still a little bit of what I would say is a sort of leftover sort of Alistair Campbell style approach to some of these things. But you know,
more so in Northern Ireland than elsewhere.
I wouldn't say so. I mean, I think in Scotland, you know, I was there when the rise of the Scottish Nationalist Party was strong, and they were pretty damn good at getting their people out, getting them on to phone-ins, getting them into onto online, and sort of swamping people with the views about the Scottish Nationalist Party. So I think it happens everywhere, but I think it is a little bit precious here because you can always get that criticism, oh, look how far we've come. And you know why all this criticism? But I don't think that's enough. I don't think it's acceptable. We're looking at a modern day Northern Ireland now. We're looking forward on policies on health and education. We don't necessarily keep looking back on Orange v Green and, you know, worrying about, frankly, about Union Jack beach towels. You know, we want to be looking about the state of our health service, the state of schools, and you know, the fact there's 85,000 spare places in our schools. All these are huge issues that we have to tackle and have to put the politicians to account for.